today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I saw the Backstreet Boys in 1998, and I took my niece. But it was Beatlemania. It was Beatlemania. My niece could not talk after the show.
Happy Friday, everybody. It is time for a Rockin' the Suburbs sports report, bracket report, tournament report. This is Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us, we have our ace analysts. Hello, Jason Goble.
Hey, everybody.
And hello, Mike Coley.
What is going on, everybody?
All right. So we're here to talk about the progress so far in the 90s album Madness Tournament. You can vote daily in matchups at facebook.com/suburbspod. We have completed the first round of the sales quadrant, and we are now just now into the first round of the critics quadrant. So we'll get to the critics in a moment. We're going to recap the action so far in the sales quadrant. And the first thing I have to say is that I screwed up something from last time we spoke about this on the podcast. I screwed up one thing, which is that for the 16 seed in the sales quadrant, I had an NSYNC album in there. All these were based on sales figures as reported by the RIAA, Recording Industry Association of America, I think is what that is. And I misread NSYNC as a 90s album. It actually was released in 2000. I also went back and double-checked everything to make sure I didn't screw anything else up, and I did not. So that's the good news. So very quickly, we made a call here. NSYNC was out, and instead, Boys to Men 2, the album 2, was slotted there into the 16. NSYNC will have to wait till next year, I guess. And Boys to Men ended up falling anyway to the number one seed, Hootie and the Blowfish, Cracked Rear View, 70-9. Jason.
Well, first off, bye to NSYNC. Sorry. as Jim said, maybe you get a chance in the 2000s. But look, I think Hootie was going to win regardless of who got put up. Last minute switch, I'll say 9 votes, you know, with the sort of switch at the end. There were at least 9 Boys to Men fans, but they haven't been said that Hootie have them was dominant.
They didn't have time to prepare, Jason. I mean,
that's true.
Yeah.
Though I'll tell you what, one of the finest moments of this tournament was at the end of the game. Boys to Men serenaded themselves off, and I realize it's not on this album, but they did say, we've come to the end of the road, and sang their way out of the arena.
Very good, very good. All right, Mike.
I had a feeling that Hootie would blow out whoever they were facing in this round. You know, being the number one seed. And as I said in the previous episode, they're kind of in a renaissance era right now where they've been touring lately, you know, as the original band. And their stuff is back out there on radio. And so it really wasn't a big surprise to me that Hootie took this matchup.
Patrick?
I would just say, if you're in a restaurant, don't order the Blowfish. Order the Perch.
There you go. Blowfish, isn't that one of those things you could order that can, like, kill you?
That's right.
If they don't prepare it right or something.
Be careful.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right, we move on to the number two seed in the sales quadrant. That would be Green Day's Dookie album. Dookie easily defeated Dixie Chicks' Wide Open Spaces, 91-17. I'm just going to tell people right now, there were really no close matchups at all, close results in this whole quadrant. But anyway, Green Day, 91, Dixie Chicks, 17. Jason.
Look, I think me and Mike both kind of said we're Dixie Chick fans, or at least fans of this album, or at least like this album. That having been said, I kind of thought it would have no chance against Green Day. Glad I threw a vote its way, Wide Open Spaces, but I knew it was going to be for naught.
I'm not a huge modern country fan. And when Dixie Chicks were a thing back in the 90s, I had never even gave them a shot. But then after all the things that happened in the meantime, I became a bigger fan of the Dixie Chicks. But I liked Green Day before I liked the Dixie Chicks. And I really didn't see them putting up a fight against the Green Day Dookie album. Because I just knowing this audience for the podcast, Green Day was obviously the choice. And I wish it was a closer decision, but I'm glad that Green Day won.
Yep.
I voted for Green Day myself.
All right. Patrick?
I think sanity prevailed here, and I think Dookie could make a run in this bracket. I mean, it's a snotty, punky album. I love it, man. You can feel yourself getting spit on when you're at the show. It's a great record.
It was so exciting when it debuted, as I recall, too. It was just like, what is this? And it was also one of those albums that it just was solid all the way through. It wasn't just like one or two good songs. It was like a lot of good songs. And when you saw
songs.
I remember
it was like almost the greatest hits album.
Yeah. And I remember seeing them I didn't see them live until later on, but I remember watching them play live on TV and just thinking, like, God, this band is tight. Just amazing how they played. But anyway. Okay. Number three seed. Here's our first upset of the tournament. Number three seed, Metallica's Black Album, easily defeated by the 14 seed Pearl Jam 10, 94-20. Wow. Jason, did you see that coming?
I did not. I'll be honest. I had a crazy day of work, and normally this is one I would have chimed in on the Facebook page at the beginning of the day. Let's get ready to rumble, because I thought this was going to be a battle back and forth. And by the time I think I went on, like, Pearl Jam was up by, like, I think 40 votes already. Pearl Jam is my pick to come out of this bracket. I picked them in the last one, and I think it's a good sign. Sorry, Metallica fans, for the blowout, but I think it's a good sign for Pearl Jam that they won kind of handily against Metallica. Probably the one that we expected to probably be the closest in this entire bracket.
Yep, totally. I would have thought that this one would have been a real battle, but didn't turn out that way. Mike?
I seriously thought this was going to be a lot closer than it was. This one was, as Keith Jacobson would say, my Sophie's choice of this round. I was in on Metallica from day one, from when they originally came out. I've been a huge Metallica fan. As you know, Stephen Routledge and I did a week's plus worth of just breaking down Metallica's catalog. And so I'm a huge Metallica fan. But I'm also a huge Pearl Jam fan. And I think the difference came from, I think it's just that Pearl Jam's songs are just, they just carry through, where they don't sound from the era. They just sound like they could come from any era, where Metallica, especially the Black Album songs, when you hear Metallica's Black Album songs, they sound like they came from the 90s. And so I think maybe that's something that had to do with the vote disparity. Pearl Jam and Metallica, they're still both going strong. They're still selling out stadiums all over the world.
Yeah.
But I think Pearl Jam songs just kind of resonate and they just kind of carry through where they, you know, they were lumped in the grunge scene. In my opinion, they're more along the lines of like the Who or the Kinks, where they were more of just like a rock band.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, they dressed in the grunge, kind of like what Patrick is dressed as tonight. But but Metallica.
He has an audition later.
That's right. But singles too. That's
right. I would watch that if you were in it. But Pearl Jam 10, I mean, that album just, you know, it just sits alone as something that comes out of the grunge era. Not alone, but it still sits there. It's something that people can listen to over and over. Where the Metallica, in my opinion, I don't listen to the Black Album like I used to back when it first came out. And I still listen to Pearl Jam's 10. So I guess that's my breakdown of why I think Pearl Jam won that one. I'm very surprised at the disparity in the voting. But
all right. Patrick?
Oh, well said by our panel. I don't think I can add anything to that.
So I just want to say real quickly, this matchup was interesting from a sports perspective, since we're on sort of the sports motif here, right? So you have Metallica, which actually has a stadium anthem in Enter Sandman, heard, of course, at Yankees games. Jason, and also Virginia Tech football has sort of taken that as their theme song when the start of the games. But that's baseball and football. Pearl Jam's album title is actually a basketball reference, right?
Yes, Mookie Blaylock.
That's right, which was their band's name for a brief time before they became Pearl Jam. So I guess the basketball reference has to win ultimately. All right.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Moving on to the fourth seed. This one was also an upset. The fourth seed was Shania Twain's Come On Over, getting defeated by number 13 Nirvana Nevermind. Speaking of grunge, 103-24.
A little recap. Shania Twain won the opening tip-off and said, "Let's go, girls." And Nirvana came back and the audience responded and said, "Man, we feel like Seattle." That having been said, I mean, look, I think we kind of knew where this one was going. You know, notwithstanding the fact Nirvana was the lower seed, we kind of expected Nirvana was going to win this and win it handily, which they ended up doing.
Mike?
Yeah, Shania Twain, I mean, again, this is more of an audience participation thing when it comes out to it. And the people who listen to this show are obviously people that are probably people who grew up listening to music in the 90s, and they probably weren't listening to pop country music.
Right.
Shania Twain was huge in the 90s, but Nirvana, huger.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so obviously Nirvana's going to win with this group. And that was an album that, you know, I don't listen to it a whole lot these days, but it still was. I remember where I was, what I was doing when I first saw the Smells Like Teen Spirit video.
Right.
On 120 Minutes when it was world premiered on MTV. And it changed the way I thought about music at that point in my life, because I didn't think that we weren't going anywhere in music. And then all of a sudden, boom, these guys show up and it blew up. And thank God, because it changed everything in the 90s. And, you know, so Nirvana, yeah, they should have won this. In my opinion, they should have won this matchup. Well,
and they did. All right. And Patrick?
I'd just say I'm a little sad because I always had kind of a thing for Shania Twain, but hey, you know, the people have spoken.
There you go.
I'll just say one last thing about the Shania Twain album, though. I happen to look at the Wikipedia page. There were singles that came out from this album from 1997, when I think it was released, until 2000. I think, you know, there were ultimately 8 or 9 singles that I think charted. So you got to give a little respect to that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's funny you say that. I noticed that too. I was looking at that Wikipedia page to get some information about this album, and I was like, man, that list of singles just goes on and on forever. It's like they just kept putting them out. What's the next song we can put out? Yeah. It's amazing.
From this moment on and on and on and on.
That's right.
And I will give Shania props because she's Canadian. And I'm ceremonial Canadian.
There you go. Although, aren't we supposed to hate Canada now? Let's skip that. Let's get back into sports. No.
James Naismith, also Canadian. All right.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. Number 5 seed, the Bodyguard soundtrack. And this one was kind of close. I guess I misspoke earlier. Bodyguard soundtrack with 35 votes to Backstreet Boys Millennium, 22 votes. So 35-22, Bodyguard wins.
I mean, look, it was the power of Whitney versus the Backstreet Boys. I ended up voting for the Boys, hoping one of their albums would end up sneaking through. But again, yeah, it's Whitney. Whitney had one of the greatest voices ever. And, you know, it probably deserved to win here.
So there were some comments on the post on Facebook about some of the songs on the Bodyguard. I will say I'm very, very naive in the whole Bodyguard soundtrack. All I know is Whitney doing Dolly Parton's song from that soundtrack. So I really just really wanted nothing to do with it, just because that was outside of my wheelhouse back then. Then again, Backstreet Boys were too. But having kids, and all of a sudden my kids are like loving the Backstreet Boys or loving bands or groups that were influenced by the Backstreet Boys and going to shows with my kids, I kind of became more enamored with the Backstreet Boys. So that's kind of why I leaned more towards Backstreet on that. But I didn't realize that there were, you know, so many other songs that people referenced on the Bodyguard soundtrack, because I didn't watch the movie. I didn't listen to the soundtrack. I only know that Whitney song from the soundtrack, and that was everywhere when that album came out. But I can see why that album sold millions of copies.
Yeah, but, well, I'm going to guess, Patrick, you can confirm this because you worked in a record store. Did you work in the record store in the 90s?
I did not. Okay. No, I was out of there by the 90s.
Here's how I picture this sale going down. A woman walks up to the cash register to check out. She's got 2 CDs. She has the Backstreet Boys for her kid, and she has the Bodyguard soundtrack for herself, right? And that was the 2 different audiences, I think.
Yeah, records, right? I can see that. Yeah.
Well said. Yeah. I'll just say briefly, I saw the Backstreet Boys in 1998. Back when newspapers used to pay freelance writers to go cover live music and pay them $45 for the privilege of doing so, and free tickets. And I took my niece, and it was sold out at the venue we shall not name around here. Jim knows what it is. But it was Beatlemania. It was Beatlemania. My niece could not talk after the show. She screamed the entire time. As soon as they came on stage, she started screaming and screamed until they left. It was Beatlemania.
Yeah.
As close as I've ever experienced.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's going to be more Backstreet Boys coming up here in just a moment. Let's see. We're going to move on to the number 6 seed. As Jason said about this 6-11 matchup last time, a Garth divided against itself cannot stand. And that is Garth Brooks against Garth Brooks. The winner here was No Fences, 38, over Rope in the Wind, 9.
Well, look, it was low scoring because I don't think Garth wanted to hurt Garth. But at the end of the day, somebody had to bring out their inner Chris Gaines. And I guess it was no offenses. And on the bright side, hey, we all get to go back to the Oasis. So there you go. No offenses for the win.
Anything, Mike? Geez.
I talked about this in our preview episode, and I'm not a Garth guy.
Yeah,
I'm not a pop country guy. But Friends in Low Places was played at least four times when I was hanging out at the Floribama when I was 21 years old with my parents and my parents' friends. And I happened to be wearing a Corona shirt that day. Why, I don't know. But they kept buying me Coronas while Garth Brooks was playing at the Floribama, which is a bar that straddles the border of Florida and Alabama. Of course it does. So you're in one spot in the bar, you're in Florida. One spot in the bar, you're in Alabama. So that's why I voted for this one. And, you know, and Thunder Rolls, I mean... That was from the same trip. I'm gonna throw this in there. From the same trip, it was New Year's. It was the week between Christmas and New Year's. So I went to a New Year's Eve party with one of my mom's friend's daughters to her friend's place, and they decided to celebrate the East because we were in the Central Time Zone in Pensacola. So they decided to celebrate the East Coast New Year by firing off shotguns from the back porch while the Thunder Rolls was playing in the background. So that's why I voted for this
All
album.
Right.
And
this is
probably the most sound criteria for ever placing a vote.
Totally valid. Totally valid. I got to ask you though, when you're at the Floribama bar and Friends in Low Places comes on, is everybody just singing along?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Everybody was singing along. I mean, the place is huge.
Yeah.
It straddles two borders for crying out loud. You know?
I guess I will just say, though, to its credit, it's that kind of a song. Like, you have to just kind of join in and sing the chorus, right? Yeah.
Again, one more trip to the Oasis.
There you go. Okay.
So there you go.
Patrick, you got anything on this?
No.
Okay. All right.
Nothing to add Let's to move that on. Brilliance.
All right. Number seven. Number seven versus number 10 was Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill versus Britney Spears, Baby One More Time. And I'm sorry if I'm stealing anybody's line here, but you ought to know who won this one. Jagged Little Pill, 97 over Baby One More Time, 17.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was Jason's line.
I know.
Honestly, actually, I was going to get serious, and I'll get serious. You know, that 97 is the second highest total win total, or second highest vote total. Both me and Mike, I think, commented that we thought Alanis may have some legs in this tournament.
Yeah.
No, sorry if I'm offending you, Alanis. I mean legs in terms of getting to the next round. I'll be honest, back in my mind, I thought this could be a matchup like some of the other ones, which got like a lower kind of overall vote total. But Alanis getting 97. I think she could be a threat. I'll be honest. I think she potentially could have go a little further in this tournament.
Mike?
I mentioned in the preview episode that Alanis still has it. She hasn't lost a step since she recorded this album. Her voice is the same, her energy is the same, and you know she hasn't recorded a whole lot since then, but that album had so many hits, and that album came out when I first met my wife, and she was a huge Alanis fan, huge, and so I listened to a lot of that via her. And it's just a great album. It's just a lot of great hits. And she wrote these songs herself. And I don't know about Britney and what song she wrote herself, and props to Britney anyways, because she, you know, she's been through some stuff for sure. But so has Alanis, and she put that to music, and that's an album I still listen to, and I will see Alanis anytime she comes anywhere near me. And so she and the vote count, like Jason referred to, is I'm surprised at the huge number of votes that she got, which is great.
I will just say, for your sake, Mike, and for all of our sake, but for your sake in particular, I hope Alanis does come near you. All right. And then also, Canadian, right? This year, here's your Canadian winner of the tournament.
Yes, another Canadian.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, I'll just say, in the interest of self-disclosure, we are all journalists here, and truth is the guiding principle of this podcast. Mike does have a restraining order against him from Alanis Morissette and Tommy Stinson. So those are two restraining orders he currently has against.
The only way to know for sure is Tommy Stinson.
Yeah. All right. Then rounding out this quadrant, we had the 8-9 matchup was 8 Santana Supernatural defeating 9 Backstreet Boys debut album. That score was 60-10 Santana.
I mean, look, this was, and I think Mike said it the last time, this was essentially Santana getting his flowers in the 90s. And you know, it's funny because I think somebody else commented, I don't think I had ever listened to the Santana album full. When you listen to that album, there is a lot of good stuff other than just smooth, whether you like it or not. I threw a vote the Backstreet Boys that way. I was hoping one Backstreet Boys would sneak into the second round. That having been said, though, they're doing fine with their Sphere money. So, congratulations to Santana at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, that album had so many guest artists on it. I mean, Dave Matthews and Carter Buford, Rob Thomas, obviously on Smooth. That song was, you couldn't escape that song that year that this album came out. Lauryn Hill was on there. CeeLo Green was on there. Everlast was on there. Eagle Eye Cherry was on there. Clapton played on that album. I mean, this is Santana cashing in on his legacy. And I'm glad that he pulled through on this.
Yeah. All right, Patrick.
Yeah,
anything?
I'll just say Jason's point is extremely salient. From my earlier anecdote, my niece, who I took to the Backstreet Boys, has been to the Sphere to see the Backstreet Boys and took her poor husband.
Oh, my goodness.
So that man's a saint.
And she could not speak afterward.
I didn't know Backstreet Boys played at the Sphere.
Yes, they did. They did dates last fall, I think. Backstreet's back, all right. I'll just leave it at that. Back.
In 5D.
In 5D.
All right. So
larger than life. Go ahead.
You got the whole set list there, Jason?
I got to tell you, there is FOMO. You know, I've been to that place. I am curious what the Backstreet Boys look like in 4D, 600 feet high.
You saw at the Sphere, you saw Dead and Company?
I saw Dead and Company.
Okay, all right.
That's the extent of my Sphere experience.
Different show, different kind of show. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Let me just do this real quickly. I'll just tell you what the second round matchups will be in this quadrant, but nobody will vote on these for until March, really, because we have to get through the first round of the other three quadrants first. But I'll just give people a preview for them. You can jot this down and, you know, put it under your pillow and at night dream of these matchups. They will be Hootie and the Blowfish, Cracked Rear View against Santana Supernatural, The Bodyguard soundtrack against Nirvana Nevermind, Pearl Jam 10 against Garth Brooks' No Fences, and Alanis Morris set Jagged Little Pill against Green Day Dookie. So stay tuned for that. Now let's move over to the Critics Quadrant. We just opened the voting on the first matchup there yesterday afternoon, but you can still get your vote in this morning up until noon Eastern time today. Again, that's at facebook.com/suburbspod. That first matchup going on right now is number one seed Lauryn Hill, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill versus number 16 Hole, Live Through This. And Jason, any comments on this matchup?
Two things. Number one, when I looked like about an hour before we started taping this, this one is pretty close. So if you haven't voted yet and you do have an interest in this, your vote's going to make a difference. Right. So I would suggest you go vote. And then number two, look, this is for a good chunk of this, a rap versus or hip hop versus rock bracket. You know, this is a matchup that I would say could kind of set an early tone as to how this bracket ends up playing out. Look, Lauryn Hill's Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is fabulous. That having been said, I mean, it's hard to argue with Courtney sort of wailing, "I'm Miss World, somebody kill me." I voted for Lauryn Hill, but I will not be surprised if Hole ends up pulling this out tomorrow.
Yeah, it's really tough. I thought going into this would be a hard one to predict, and so far that has been the case. All right, let's move on to the number 215 matchup. That is to the Notorious B.I.G. Ready to Die versus number 15 Lucinda Williams Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. And how do you see that one shaking out, Jason?
So, look, I do love it when you all call me Big Papa. That having been said, I have a feeling I think I know this community, and I kind of think Lucinda's pulling the upset tomorrow. I just kind of think it's going to be Lucinda's day, or I guess tomorrow into Saturday.
Yeah. Mike, anything on Biggie versus Lucinda?
Biggie's huge. Biggie is huge. He was so influential back in the 90s in the hip hop genre. And I got to go with Biggie. I love Lucinda. I love especially that song. But I love the Biggie album. It took me a while to get into the 90s hip hop scene, but once I did, yeah.
Are you more of an East Coast or West Coast guy?
I'm an East Coast guy. Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of the 80s yes. New York City hip hop scene. With De La Soul and A Tribe Called Quest, and you know that the Beastie Boys and that whole crew.
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, hold your thoughts here on Tribe Called Quest coming up soon. All right, Patrick. Anything on this matchup?
I just checked the books, and it's a pick 'em.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. All right, and then the 314 matchup, that will be three Wu-Tang Clan Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers versus 14 REM Automatic for the People.
All right, so I realize REM has an army. They were the first ones who I think I mentioned had like some sort of military force when I brought up military forces in this competition, and I love Automatic of the People. I think out of the 90s albums, that is probably my favorite of the 90s albums that REM did. That having been said, I'm a New Yorker, and I feel amiss if I didn't do what I'm about to do, which is to say, New York, Wu-Tang. They're bringing the Shaolin style. They're bringing the sword style. And we're bringing the ruckus. And we're taking down Automatic for the people and preserving someone's nipple at the end of the day.
All right. Mike, can you follow that?
I am a huge REM fan. I've been an REM fan since probably 1985. But Wu-Tang, they're for the children. You better protect your neck, REM. Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, protect your neck, because the Wu-Tang is for the children. And Wu-Tang is going to take this.
Oh, wow. All right. Patrick?
Protect your nipple.
All right. okay. all right. Moving on to number 4, Dr. Dre, The Chronic versus number 13, Missy Elliott, Supa Dupa Fly.
Wow.
Look, I love Missy Elliott from day one. And that song with the rain and beep, beep, who's got the keys to the Jeep? Or I think that was the lyric. That haven't been said. I mean, I think Dr. Dre's The Chronic wins, and I think wins kind of sizable.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm going Chronic. Dr. Dre was so influential, not just then, but now still. And that album itself was huge back in the 90s, and it still resonates now. So, Trey, sorry, Missy, but
yeah,
Trey.
Yeah. Patrick?
Yeah, I'll agree with Mike. I think that The Chronic is an incredibly influential album in the history of music. If you go back and look at what happened and how the role of a producer slash artist evolved from this record, really, really influential. And Missy Elliott's record is incredibly fun. Like, I love that record. It's great, great, great music. But yeah, I got to go with Dr. Dre on this one too.
Yeah. Okay. And then number 5 is Radiohead's OK Computer going up against number 12, Erykah Badu, Baduism.
So I'll call my shot here with this bracket. I think OK Computer is the one that's going to emerge at the end of the day out of this one. Erykah Badu's album is good. Actually, I would say obviously much better than good. That having been said, I think OK Computer takes it at the end of the day here.
Patrick?
It's a bad spot, as Jason said, for Erykah Badu. It's just, you know, the luck of the draw when they pull the seeds out. It's just it's a great record, and I encourage everyone to listen to it. I hope, especially starting with this bracket, everyone starts listening to all these records at least once.
Agreed.
And this is a great one to listen to, but yeah, bad spot. Bad spot.
Yep. Okay, and then number 6 in the critics quadrant is Tribe Called Quest, The Low End Theory, going up against number 11, My Bloody Valentine, Loveless. We just lost Mike for a bit from our satellite hookup, but he mentioned earlier his love of A Tribe Called Quest, so I think that has already been stated for the record. Jason, what are your thoughts on this?
So, look, my Bloody Valentine, that Loveless album, is a classic. I mean, basically, I think was the intro to shoegaze to the world. That having been said, probably my favorite rap group is neck and neck between De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest. And I think Tribe Called Quest takes this.
Patrick?
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. That's Loveless is not even my favorite My Bloody Valentine album, even though it's very influential. I'm much more of a fan of Isn't Anything. And I really hope A Tribe Called Quest wins this. Not to influence anyone, but your vote is your own. This is a democracy. Just my personal pick would be Tribe Called Quest. Yeah.
Nice. All right. We have Mike back. Mike.
He's back. Yeah.
We were talking about Tribe Called Quest versus My Bloody Valentine, and we know that you love Tribe Called Quest.
I love Tribe. Love Tribe Called Quest. Love Tribe Called Quest. My Bloody Valentine, I came into later in life than I did Tribe. Honestly, I don't know how that happened because I was such an indie rock guy back in the 90s. But Tribe, I had a friend who made a mixtape for me back in the day. And he put all kinds of cool stuff on this mixtape. And Tribe was on there. And I'm like, yep, I'm all in on Tribe. Tribe is my hip-hop band. Bottom line.
Yeah, right? Cool.
So I'm going to vote for Tribe for anything. And so hopefully Tribe wins. Love my Bloody Valentine. But, sorry. Tribe's my band, my hip hop band for the 90s.
All right. I think we got it.
Fife Dog, rest in power.
Rest in power.
Yes, baby. Yes.
The number 7-10 matchup is Nas Illmatic versus Jay-Z's Reasonable Doubt. Jason.
So, and again, I think Mike commented on this the last time that, you know, I think even hip hop people think Illmatic, maybe the greatest hip-hop album ever. It's going against the powerhouse in Jay-Z. I will be going for Illmatic. My heart says Illmatic. I gotta be honest, I think a lot of people may come out for Jay-Z here and end up voting Reasonable Doubt.
Mike?
Yeah, I kind of agree with what Jason just said. More people know who Jay-Z is than who Nas is. But if you're in the hip-hop scene, if you know hip-hop music, you know that Illmatic is one of the best hip-hop albums that's ever been made. And when you troll through the hip-hop groups, it's still, I mean, kids today who are just getting into hip-hop, they cite Nas' Illmatic album as one of the best albums ever made. And so, sorry, Jay-Z, but Nas got you beat here.
All right, Patrick?
Yeah, I echo that sentiment. I don't think, you know, when these records came out, obviously Jay-Z was going to be such a big celebrity and have a superstar wife and all that. So you have to retrospectively think about that. But to me, I mean, if I'm going to play one of these two records, it's not going to be the Jay-Z album.
Yep. Okay. And then we're going to round out this preview with 8 versus 9. 8 is Outkast Aquamini versus 9, Liz Phair Exile in Guyville.
I do love Outkast. I think one of my regrets is I did not get to any of those Outkast reunion shows when they got back together. And I guess I forgot when it was, but when they ultimately reunited for a bunch of shows, festivals. Look, I happened to see Liz Phair like a couple of years ago on her Exile in Guyville anniversary. I forgot how good that album was, I think Liz Phair is getting through. And I'll say this, you know, a lot of times in this tournament, we talk about how the women kind of fall by the wayside or relatively early. And there is definitely with Alanis, and we talked about earlier, and, you know, with potentially Liz Phair, a hole in Lauryn Hill is going to obviously get a woman out there. And I think you may have, based on my predictions, I think you may have two other women rounding out the half the critics quadrant.
Yeah. All right, Mike, anything?
Exile of Gaiville, loved it when it first came out. As soon as it came out, I'm like, yep, I got to get this. It was her response to the Stones, Exile on Main Street. And she was not afraid to just expose herself on that album. And she absolutely crushed it. That is one of my favorite albums of the 90s. Outkast, I didn't know a whole lot about Outkast outside of, you know, their singles. But when I saw them perform at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony, they crushed it. Outkast were awesome. But Liz Phair is she's the winner in this one, in my opinion, because she is just one fantastic human being that writes about the female perspective, and that was her reaction to Exile on Main Street. Exile is awesome.
Cool. Hey, anything, Patrick?
Yeah, just really quick, I'll say that this is kind of the matchup from this round that I wish weren't paired up against each other, because I both think both these records have like tremendous merit to them, especially the early Outkast. I know there, you know, there were some singles that exposed Outkast to the wider public, and when that happens, I often like to go back to the album before that to see like what the seeds were of somebody building this, right? But I don't know. The guys have expressed their thoughts about Liz Phair perfectly for me. So I don't know. It's a coin flip. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen, but I wish they weren't kind of matched up.
All right, let's wrap this up, guys. We'll do another bracket recap in at the end of next week. In the meantime, of course, listen to Rock in the Suburbs every day. And vote in these matchups every day at facebook.com/suburbspod. Thank you very much, Jason. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster. And I'd just like to say really quick before we close, and we'll talk to you guys on Monday, but hey, let's be nice to each other, okay? Yeah. It's just fun and it's just music, so.
Yeah. And just in life, be nice to each other. I think that'd be a good way to go, right? Okay.
I love it. Yeah.
All right.
Empathy.
I'll just say I love you guys.
Hey, right back at
all
you.
Right, thank you. All right. Yo, that's what I was looking for.
Back on the bully when cats used to harmonize like. Yo. My men and my women, don't forget about the dean. This is not the most the king. Yo. It's about a thing.
Feel real good when your hands. And lick two shots in the atmosphere.
Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. How you think you really gonna pretend? Like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian. A Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gem, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. Nigga, you still defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because it's sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again. Yo, a win-win. Come again.
Dedicated. faded to the man. More concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women. Him and his man. Come in the club like hooligans. Don't care who they your fan, Papa Yang.
Protect your neck.